Hey everybody, Stu Smith here, going live, going to chat a little bit, take some questions, give some answers, and show some swim videos, and talk a little bit about some common mistakes that people make, especially with swimming. But before we do, and while you guys hop on, I want to share something with you, because I posted this up on Instagram. And you guys can see this because I want to start it off with this quote because I saw this quote and I really liked it, right? But I thought it was missing something and you can kind of see what I added to it, but I'll read it. Talent hits a target no one else can hit. True, I give you that. Genius hits a target no one else can see. I would agree with that. But I think what Arthur left out was one more very important element, and that is hard work and dedication hit a target no one thought possible. So anyway, just a little thought. It's kind of my take on the old classic hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard type of thing. So anyway, I had a fun time when I saw that because I have seen people throughout my life have way more talent than I have, much more smarter than I am, and maybe didn't make it through a process. Whether that was, I remember seeing like valedictorians that I met at the Naval Academy, you know, quit their first year or fail out their first year. I almost did, but I figured it out and had to work really, really hard. And hard work got me through that. Nothing else. I mean, I don't think there was a particular talent or definitely not genius that I had. It was just pure grinding it out and being consistent. Like, I love Tuesdays because I always call Tuesday of the week my consistency day. Because it's real easy to, you know, take the weekend, moderately easy day, take Sunday off, and then you come in hard on Monday. But, you know, getting up Tuesday and getting it done again, that takes a little bit more, dedication, a little more commitment. Because it's real easy to find people who are interested in doing things and setting goals, but being committed to those goals is the next level, whether or not you're going to accomplish them or not. So anyway, if you're not the most talented person, you're not the smartest person, don't feel bad. I was never the most talented or smartest person in any room that I was in. Still not. And, grinding it out, you know, you can definitely reach a level where you're honored to be in those rooms and be a part of that. But at the same time, you know, you got there through hard work. And that's extremely valuable. Extremely valuable. So anyway, there you go. That's my little pep talk for this morning as we get people on. I do have some videos to show you guys as well. Thanks for that one. Appreciate it. So why don't I go right into it? I don't see any questions yet, which is fine. I'm going to share my screen again, and we'll start talking some combat swimmer stroke videos. So let me see what we got here. Make this a little bigger. Go really well. All right. So we got a good kick off the wall, double arm pulls. I like that breaststroke kick off the wall. This is really good. One Mississippi, two Mississippi. Probably could glide a little longer. One Mississippi, two Mississippi pull. Yeah, it's a little better. Let's see what we got here. Good streamline. Look at that streamline. I like that. Decent double arm pull. I will say this. I mean, I'm being very nitpicky here. See how you kind of float those arms out there next to you? on that one. Try to keep them closer to your side a little bit. I'll show you right here. Like, right here. Right. Not that that's a huge break in your swimming and gliding, but if you can just get those in a little tighter, like touching your pants there or your shorts, you know, your streamline is going to be a lot tighter, and your recovery could be a little tighter too. So that's pretty good there. Just looked like off the wall, your recovery wasn't that tight, but in the stroke, it's really tight. Top arm, bottom arm. Notice how your arms or hands are staying real close to your body on that recovery. That's pretty good. That was a 50-second 50 there. Could be like 49 seconds because a little bit of delay in starting the video. Top arm, bottom arm. The one thing I would say here is probably go a little deeper with that top arm pull. What I mean by that is try to treat it more like a freestyle catch. And if you don't know what a freestyle catch is, I'm going to show you. So basically, whenever you are getting into this position right here and about to pull that top arm, it's pretty good. You're getting that arm more vertical. A lot of people just pull like this, right? You get that arm vertical way out in front of you, almost like you're reaching over a barrel, grabbing all of that water, and then pulling it and pushing it back behind you. So you should feel this in your lats when you grab that water, and in your triceps, because you're also, you know, basically kicking it back like a tricep kickback, you know, on the back end of that. So that's going to make the top arm a lot more powerful. You're almost there. I just think it could be a little bit better on that arm pull. Let me see what I can find, because I want to show this video. I do like this video here. In fact, I'm going to put this link, because it's just a YouTube video. All I did was I go to the YouTube search and I typed in freestyle catch. You'll see dozens of people showing you how to swim. And that's all I'm doing here. Freestyle catch
and entry. It makes sure your hand and forearm are in the right position to pull through. This is the most complicated and technical part of the freestyle stroke, and it's important to maximize your arm propulsion.
Pull water with that, because where a lot of people
how to do it
up on the arm pull is they just
after the entry, your arm is fully extended forward just below the surface.
So it's kind of omnidirectional in the force vectors. See how he's pulling.
Initiate the catch by slightly bending your wrist first, allowing your hand to drop and the elbow to bend. Your elbow keeps bending until the forearm is in a 45 to even 90 degree angle to your upper arm. The catch should feel light and easy, with no pressure on the palm of your hand. We're only getting your forearm and hand in the right position to pull.
A lot of difference, and then just be super streamlined with it.
While bending your elbow, it doesn't move and remains in front.
The good news is you don't need to be that good, right? You need to be good at swimming. You don't need to be that good at swimming. But you can definitely learn a few things from some competitive swimmers about the technique that is required of you when you do swim. But that was a good one. Impressive. So we'll show another one. I saw a question pop up that I thought was a good one here. Can you tell us a time you failed and how it made you better? Man, I wrote a whole article of how I failed. My first year at the academy was nothing but failure. Failure, Stu Smith. So I can't remember what this article is called, but it's how failures can drive success. All right, so this article, we all fail at some point. It is what we do next that matters the most. So here. I'm going to put this article in there, but I'll give you a quick recap of that article. But it's a good one because, you know, I show up at the academy 18 years old out of high school, been a football player, power lifter. I ran track, or I threw in track, played baseball. I wrestled. You know, I was doing a whole lot of stuff. Like physically, fitness wise, I thought I was pretty darn good. You know, did well on the CFA. Not great, but I did well on it. But I don't know why. I just didn't really have take the tests enough to really create much of a strategy around it. So whenever I got there, I was fired up to take this fitness test. And I started off with sit-ups way too fast. And I failed my first fitness test ever in the Navy, right? My first one I failed. I think I had to get 65 sit-ups and I got 62, I think, 63. I can't remember, but it was close. I mean, it was just like I had nothing left in me. There's like 15 seconds left and I have nothing. And one of the detailers that was in charge of us at the time said, you started off too fast. I counted 35 in the first 30 seconds and you didn't even match that in the next minute and a half. So with that knowledge, I started practicing a pace that would allow me to do better on that fitness test. And a few weeks later, got to take the test again, and I got 80. By the end of the summer, I was able to get 100, right? So, you know, that is one way I got better, but that's a minor one. You know, probably some of the biggest ones were just purely just every day you're getting crapped on for messing up something, right? You just, there's so much stuff you have to do, at least my first year at the academy, so much stuff you have to do on top of an academic load that is insane. So, I think at my first grading period, I had a 1.95 average. I didn't have any Fs, but I had a lot of C's and D's, and I had never made a C or D in high school. I mean, I wasn't a genius. I wasn't a valedictorian. I think I was like top 10 in my class at high school. But you know, that was a humbling experience. Busting my ass to make C's was very humbling. And then, you know, I was able to turn a couple into B's by the end of the year. And man, it was tough. It was, you know, I know it's academic stress, but it was still stress, physically stressed, you know. So here's how I failed, right? So I go there preparing to play football. I wanted to be a football player, graduate and be a pilot, fly F-14s, right? Maybe F-18s by then. And I did none of those things because I had to refigure out, one, what I really wanted to do, and two, find a system that was going to allow me to do it. But failed my fitness test, didn't make the football team, wound up playing rugby. Probably the best thing I've ever done because I had several mentors on there that I saw what they were doing to get through this place. And they were just hard charging guys that worked out before school started. They go to rugby practice. They work out after rugby practice. And then, you know, they were a couple of years ahead of me. And I noticed, you know, a year later, they were making it through BUDS and they were becoming Marines and doing, you know, whatever they wanted to do afterwards. I'm like, huh, I need to start doing that. So I would work out in the morning, maybe even do a quick swim for lunch if I had a fifth period off. And then I go rugby practice and then I work out again afterwards and I go study all night. You know, I just found a system that made it work for me. And it wasn't pretty, you know, I wasn't the best at anything. Right. And, but I will tell you this, many of the folks that I graduate with will always tell you, they'd never seen someone work harder. So I take that with a great amount of pride. You know, yes, I had to work harder. Otherwise, I would not have made it through there. So there you go, Daniel. Hope that helps. Are you guys ready for another another video? Let me share this screen again. Make this bigger. And thing that matters. So top arm, bottom arm, kick, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four. Yeah, you're overgliding. You can kind of see it too. You see yourself just slow down. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four. Yeah, I shouldn't be able to say that third Mississippi. You should be pulling on three. But this is good. You got a good amount of, yeah, you got to work on that top arm pull too. Notice the top arm pull. Could be a little deeper. Could be grabbing more water way out in front of you. Yeah, you're just overgliding. Got a lot of extra kicks going on. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three. That's better. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four. Yeah, see, every now and then it's just not consistent. I don't think your kick is more powerful enough and your streamline good enough to be able to glide for four Mississippis. There's a few guys that I've seen over the years that had a really strong kick, super streamlined, and could glide for four Mississippis, and had the conditioning to glide for four Mississippis, because you know you are not breathing when you're underwater gliding. So you know it's going to take a level of conditioning to one, be able to do breaststroke pullouts every wall, to be able to glide, and to be able to maintain this pace. You know, lap after lap. Yeah, you're just overgliding. But it's pretty good, though. Not bad. I mean, you got the whole stroke down. It's just some minor issues with the glide, I would say. How often do you guys include technique drills, if any? Technique drills, well, pretty much every time we swim, we will do technique drills in the pool. Because most of my guys have issues with swimming. And that's why they come to me, because I'm out of everything I do, I probably teach swimming the best. Though, like I said, I am also a power lifter and do calisthenics well. So every day in the pool, our warm-ups will focus on a weakness in the pool. So usually the first 10 minutes of every swim workout, we will either tread, we will swim a 500-yard warm-up, we will bottom bounce or float, you know, do something. So whatever that weakness is, let's say you're not doing well in the 500, I'm going to have you warm up with a 500 because I want you to be able to think in your head that, oh, this 500-yard swim, this is just my warm-up. I do this every day. It's easy. It's my warm-up. And get in shape to do it by doing it. Once you've gotten that, and now we're seeing issues with drown-proofing skills, treading water, anything else, that's our aquatic warm-up prior to doing the swim workout, whether that's a 50-50 or it's a swim with fins for an hour, you know, whatever that is that we've built up to, that is typically how we do it in the water. Now, as far as technique day, when we lift, absolutely. You know, there's some fine techniques that we can do. When I see people screw up push-ups or pull-ups, you know, there's some little hand placement issues that I typically spot correct. But I would say the most technique drills we do will be in the water. Sometimes when we're on the track, I can see how people are running, and there may be a running issue with people overstriding or maybe have weird arm swings or something that you can fix. But yeah, there's always a technique that gets adjusted, especially in a large group. But that's how we put in the that's how we put in technique stuff. make technique stuff of your weakness part of your warm-up. It works really well. Highly recommend it. All right, for ruck, can I do it with any type of backpack? And how much weight should it be in there if I'm a beginner? I mean, you can. I mean, I would get something a little sturdy so you can actually put some weight in it. Sometimes those little school backpacks that you would put books in are really not the answer because, one, they're not going to have a waistband. They're not going to be very wide on your shoulders, so they'll just dig into your shoulders. So I would get a military-style backpack, or if you want to, as you're a beginner, maybe do that with a weight vest to get started and start off with like 25 pounds. But I guess a better answer would be, I would say build up to 25% of your body weight over time and get up to 40 to 50 pounds, because typical rucks, no matter what weight you are, will get up into that 40 to 50 pound range. Some will get even heavier to 75 and 80. So depending on your job that you're preparing for, you need to know and understand what those rucks are going to weigh in your future. You know, 75, 80 pound rucks, 100 pound rucks, not fun to walk around with. But I will say this, you're not running with those for sure. You're just grinding. But I've seen a lot of people be able to do a, you know, shuffle type run with 40, 50 pounds. But my advice for you just starting out would be 10% of your body weight. I'm a 200 pound guy, you know, so 20 pounds is a good place to start. 20, 25 pounds is a good place to start. Build up to 25, 30% of your body weight over time. Do you believe getting winded while doing underwater turns is a swimming shape issue or a pacing issue? Huh. Good question. It's both. You know, I think getting winded is a conditioning issue. And it's also how you're pacing, because, you know, if you're pacing too fast, you're going to be a little more winded than you normally are used to. And that may make those turnarounds a little harder. However, you're pacing at a normal pace that you're used to. You may not be that winded going into that turn. So I would say it's a little bit of both, but primarily it's a conditioning issue. In fact, that article I wrote, Dude, You're Not in Swimming Shape, is really kind of based on that. You know, there's multiple ways that I can see conditioning being an issue. And this article that I'm putting into the comment section has all of them put into an article that is just kind of funny. Have you ever been given an impossible task you know you will fail, perhaps at Buds? If so, how'd you deal with it? You know, I don't really know. I'm going to have to think about that one. I don't think so, but I'll have to look. I mean, perhaps, but I don't know if it was given to me as an impossible task, or I just couldn't do it and I failed. So I don't know the structure of that. My answer is my best guess. But have I ever been given a task that I failed at? Sure. Have I been given a task that I thought was impossible, but I got it? Yes. So, Or, you know, I shouldn't say that. You know, failing and not doing well. I got the job done, but it wasn't done well. And I had plenty of feedback on what I screwed up, but I still finished. You know, so there's so many different ways that answer could go. So I'm not sure if that's a great answer for you, but I really don't think I've ever been given on purpose an impossible task just so I would fail. Now, I will say this, every Bud's room inspection and uniform inspection, you could consider it that, because, you know, there came a point where I would bust my ass to get my uniform perfect, shoes shiny, helmet shiny, and fail, and then go get wet and sandy and ruin my perfectly good uniform that I spent all night on and doing it. And it just got to a point where I'm like, screw this. I'm not going to bust my ass just to fail because I know what's coming. We're all going to fail. And then I didn't put enough time into it, what I would consider enough time into it, and I didn't fail. So there may be some impossible tasks that it doesn't matter. You're going to get wet and sandy because you failed, regardless of how much effort you put into it and how great you look. So, yes, in that sense, yes, there are events throughout Bud's where you're going to fail, whether or not you failed or not. Love your insight on hard work. I'm guilty of thinking more than doing. Thinking is good. I would agree. But I've often forgot that thinking about work is not the same as doing the work. Just getting it done. Yes, sir. I agree, man. Just get it done. How strict do you think a candidate preparing should be with his diet? Is there some point leading up to selection course where you should completely strict with no allowances? You know what? To be honest with you, you're a young guy preparing for a selection. Just eat a lot. Eat for energy. You know, there's probably not a one of you that are trying to eat to lose weight. You know, every now and then you might find somebody who's a former football player that needs to drop another 10 to 15 pounds. But then in that case, yes, you need to be strict with it. But for the most part, it's just like work your ass off and you can eat pretty much whatever you want. I mean, I didn't really start thinking about my diet until I was like 35. Because then I started noticing, I'm not losing this winter weightlifting weight like I used to in previous years as easily as I did before. So now in my 50s, you know, I look at food, I gain weight. So I just can't even consider eating like I used to. Even though I have no problem with working out, I'm probably working out, you know, 15 hours a week, you know, with all the different cardios and things like that. So me burning calories is not the issue. Me eating like just larger portions has always been my issue. So I find that if I just get a little more disciplined in the amount of food I eat, I'm fine. And I'll be back at my college weight of like 197, 198, and I'm pretty happy there. Which I'm about 7-8 pounds away from that right now. So I'm close. What's the best time of the day to go swimming? I don't know. I just went swimming at 8 o'clock, got out of there before 9. And that was great because you know why? The pool was empty. No one else was there except for me and another dude that I was helping. I go in the afternoon. I go at lunch. Sometimes I even swim in the evenings. So, because just when the pool was open that day. So, unfortunately, I would probably swim first thing in the morning if my pool allowed it. But the people who are in there at before 6 a.m. are competitive swimmers getting after it. And we can't get in there till about 7:45 most days. So that's where we do it. So we start our workouts and we swim last. Trying to come down to Maryland in September. Where do I send the waiver I'm supposed to fill out? Should I just email it to you? Yeah, you can email it to me, or you can just print it out and bring it and hand deliver it to me. That's fine too. I just put it in a folder and save it for later. Do candidates still impress you in terms of physical standards? Oh, yes, absolutely. Can you think of anyone who truly impressed you? Oh, hundreds. I mean, we do assessments pretty regularly. So this last lift assessment we did, I try to get everybody I train in the double digits with a body weight bench press. And I always thought that was pretty good, right? 15, maybe get 20 reps of, you know, if you weigh 185, you're cranking out 185 for 20 reps. That's really good. However, we had guys who were a little lighter, not much lighter, like 165, 175, cranking out 40 repetitions of their body weight, which I thought was insane. And then we had a dude that was 215 that cranked out 33 of his body weight. I was like, good Lord, that was really impressive too. So bodyweight bench press, I thought was a pretty fun one. Pull-ups, you know, seeing guys hit their 60s and 70s. You know, swimming, usually it's a competitive swimmer cranking out sub six swims on a 500. Yesterday we did a deadlift workout in supplement of some other activities, which was kind of like a full body day. Yes, he's a gymnast though. So 60 and 70 pull-ups is, he was a gymnast. In fact, every gymnast I've seen has done over 50, just about. It's just a superpower. Where was I? Oh, we did deadlifts. Yeah, and the guys were hitting 405 and hadn't deadlifted since our winter lift cycle. You know, so that was damn good. I mean, we do a week of lifting every month just to maintain our strength, but nobody lost any strength since our deep in our winter lift cycle. And by the way, this guy was 155 and deadlifted 405. So that impressed me a lot. To have that kind of strength and be, you know, relatively light like that is a pound for pound strength that not many people have. So I usually try to get people 1.5 to 2.0 their body weight in deadlifts, just to have some strength foundation under you and still be able to run and do all that stuff. But yeah, to see 155 go 405, that was legit. I mean, he's almost three times his body weight if he tried. I wouldn't let him go any higher just because it's just ego at that point. You know, he did 405 really easily. Probably could have done 425, maybe even more. And he wanted to try to see if he could get three times his body weight. I'm like, why? You know, I don't want to watch you for the next month crying about your sore back or worse, injured back. You know, for no good reason. So, you know, 2.0 your body weight is enough, right? 1.5 to 2.0 is great. So your stories and advice are always the best. Well, thank you, Daniel. You'll get wet and sandy regardless of how hard you work. Yeah, you will. And eventually you'll get to a mindset of like at the beginning, you're going to sweat everything. You're going to like, I got to work really hard on making this shiny and making this, you know, perfectly folded and all these things. And eventually you're like, yeah, what are they going to do? Make me get wet and sandy? And you just get wet and sandy, right? And it's over with, right? And just move on. And you got to clean your uniform again and get on with it. So Have I ever advised someone not to go to selection and they go and crush it? No, I have not. I will say this. I was surprised by a couple. I was a little bit on the fence of whether or not I thought they could make it. But I also didn't want to put that into their head of like, you know, physically they were, you know, meeting all the standards. But I didn't really know them well enough to really understand, you know, where they were with their mindset and mentality. You know, could they handle negative feedback? Could they, you know, could they get through the grind? Right. And I didn't want to be that voice in the back of their head saying, you know, I really don't think you're ready. You shouldn't go. You know, and that's the last thing they need to hear from a coach of me saying that. But I will say this. I have told many people, in fact, I just told several in the last few weeks that, hey, you know, don't leave this year. Wait till we get through the winter lift cycle just to be a little more durable. Because you're not ready yet. And they agreed. And they're like, yeah, I need to work on some things, which is fine. We all need to work on some things. You know, not every one of us are good at everything coming into this journey. Nobody is. And you got to find those weaknesses and not ignore them. And that's what we do. But yes, I have found people that I was like, kind of surprised that they just absolutely crushed it. So there you go. And I've had people just the opposite, completely surprised they didn't make it. Like there was no reason why physically they shouldn't have made it. Right. But for some reason they did not manage to get through cold water or people yell at them or negative feedback or girlfriend problems. You know, there's a whole list of things in the back of your head that can make you change your mind, even though you're winning races and finishing in the top 10 of everything. So it's not just all perfect physical fitness performance. There's a certain level of grit that is involved that really is unmeasurable. Like I can't measure somebody's heart and how bad they want something. You just gotta kind of hope that's the plan. Because, you know, like in the beginning of this conversation, I talked about, you know, it's real easy to see somebody interested in doing these types of professions in the tactical world, but being committed to getting to and through those training programs is another level of really, really hard to measure. I mean, yeah, you can take some metrics, but all you got to do is look at the guy. Is he grinding it out every day? Is he making all the workouts? Is he doing extra stuff on his own? You know, what's going on? So there you go. A couple more questions. Let's see. Have you ever considered doing a recording of a whole workout with your guys? Can't seem to find any. You know what? I have not. And I really haven't wanted to do that. Mainly because, you know, some of my guys are heading to jobs where they don't want to be famous, right? Not that I'm famous. It's just that, you know, any amount of exposure, you know, on the internet is probably not the best thing. Yeah, I could probably black out their faces and things like that. But that's a pain in the ass. But I've thought about it. But I just haven't quite figured out a way to best do that, you know, the guys would probably do it just because I asked them, but I wouldn't want to put them in any situation in their future that draws attention to them, you know, whether it's a buds instructor or somebody else. How long are they average guys with you and your group before heading to selection? It varies. Yeah, probably the shortest one that was, you know, successful was probably 3 months. But I've also had guys here for a year and a half, sometimes 2 years, but they needed the time and they were successful. So anywhere in between, I would say the average is about 6 months. What is life in the teams like right now? How would it compare to 2000, 2010, as well as your time in the 90s? I would say it's very similar to my time in the 90s. Post 9/11 is a whole different world. I mean, they were deploying to places that, you know, they woke up every morning and somebody's trying to kill them. That is not the situation right now. I mean, there may be certain situations where, or places where they will go, where there are missions that are available to do. But, you know, when you're not at war, your life is a little bit different. And I would say today's is a little more compared to ours, where we're doing a lot of, still doing a lot of traveling. We're in locations where we are accessible. And if somebody needs the, you know, a SEAL team or whatever unit, in a moment's notice. But they're typically doing some bilateral training with other, special ops units. You know, that's where, you know, we were able to work with the French and the Italians and the British and Norwegians and, Israelis, you know, so we just bounced around and, you know, worked with all those guys in the 90s and doing, you know, training, really. But, you know, those things build relationships that last a really long time. And then, you know, in the near future, 9/11 happens and, you know, those guys from NATO are also joining you in there and you already have a relationship with many of them. So those things matter too, but it's just different. All right, guys, let me do one more video. I think I have one more, and then I need to call it quits here because I am. There we go. I got like 10 things I need to do today. All right, make this bigger. The circular arm. Notice all the force vectors he has there. He's pulling out, and now he's pulling down. Right. So this looks like a jumping jack whenever he is pulling, and that's really kind of a weak double arm pull, because it's just not unidirectional. So whenever you do this pull, you want to grab water and pull it, you know, right down in one direction, not all this big round circle directions. So that's the first minor thing. Nothing horrible. I mean, it's kind of nitpicky, but it's something. So let's see what we got here. We're definitely overgliding. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. Yeah, I shouldn't say that third Mississippi. Probably see a little bit better on this one. Yeah. Not bad. Didn't lose a lot of momentum there. So let's go. So top arm, bottom arm, kick. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, pull. Yeah. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, pull. Yeah. So you're about a second off. I think you're just losing some momentum, and your streamline's not really that tight. Notice your elbows could be a little tighter to your head. Let me see if it looks better going this way. Yeah, your head could be down a little more. Your biceps could be on your ears. You know, you're kind of... yeah, kind of bent a little bit with your glide. Head's popping up. So just so you know, right? This, with your head up like this, is not as efficient as this. With your head down, biceps on your ears, makes it a lot more streamlined. And I get it. It's a little nitpicky. Got a little flutter kicks going on there that could go away. Nothing horrible, though. They're almost like rotational kicks. You notice that they're really, when you pull your arm, your feet move. Very common. That's a lot different than like constantly just flutter kicking the whole time, or doing a big scissor kick with three flutter kicks in it. Because I've seen guys total up about 500 flutter kicks doing that, and that gets tiring. And it will make you winded, too. All right. There we go. All right. Yes, I will be back on Monday. And yeah, we'll do it again. I may even come back on Friday this week. I have an open day that I'm doing a podcast on Thursday and then may have a video on Friday, but it's going to be talking about, you know, a specific training program that I get a lot of questions on. But be around, you know, if you sign up, get notifications, you know, they'll at least ping you whenever I'm coming on. But I try to keep it about roughly the same time if I can. So, look, I got one more question. One more question here. So, what pace would you run? Would you recommend? What pace run would you recommend for a slower recovery day? Usually, my working pace is about 7 minutes. Well, if I'm doing a recovery day, I'm probably going to opt for biking or swimming. That's just me. But if you wanted to do a nice and easy one, like, you know, I did yesterday, I did a second run for about 4 miles and that was slow. It was on grass, felt good. So yeah, I would say eight minute pace, you know, try to keep your heart rate in that zone two. A zone two recovery run makes a lot of sense. So, but I do need to go. I got another event coming up. So you guys check out stusmithfitness.com for programs, ebooks, books. If I missed your email or you come up with an idea or a question, send it to me, stu@stusmith.com. I do answer those. Send me a video. We'll critique it for you. And yeah, if you use the live15 coupon code, you will save 15% over there at stusmithfitness.com. So right there, live15. Check it out. All right, guys. I will see you later. Hope you guys have a good rest of the week. You guys keep grinding, and I'll be back next week. Have a good one.